Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Suta Goswami said, being afraid for having killed so many subjects on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Maharaj Yudhishthir went to the scene of the massacre. There, Bhishma Dev was lying on a bed of arrows, about to pass away. Purport. In this ninth chapter, as it is willed by Lord Sri Krishna, Bhishma Dev will impart instructions to King Yudhishthir on the subject of occupational duties. Bhishma Dev will also offer his last prayer to the Lord on the verge of passing away from this material world, and thus become liberated from the bondage of further material engagements. Bhishma Dev was endowed with the power of leaving his material body at will, and his lying down on the bed of arrows was his own choice. This passing away of the great warrior attracted the attention of all the contemporary elites, and all of them assembled there to show their feelings of love, respect, and affection for the great soul. Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagandaragunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padang Sahagandalalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanepyo Vaishnavepyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. In this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first canto, which is a preface for the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, we see the description of the passing away of Lord Krishna and his various associates that will come up in the chapters ahead. So, such passing away of the Lord is not an ordinary thing, and neither is the passing away of his great devotees like Bhishma Dev. A huge battle has just taken place in Kurukshetra, and we have seen at the end of the previous chapter, chapter 8, that Yudhishthir Maharaj is mortified. He is completely grief-stricken, and nothing can console him. And as we read, that he was so overwhelmed by the death of his friends that he was just aggrieved like a materialistic person. And he could not be convinced despite instructions by great sages headed by Vyas and the Lord Krishna himself, and despite all historical evidence. Now, this is something very unusual. Not only have all the great sages tried, not only has all the historical evidence been placed before Yudhishthir Maharaj, but even the Supreme Lord himself tried his best to convince Yudhishthir Maharaj that there was no cause for grief, that what happened by the arrangement of destiny was supreme, and ultimately dharma had to prevail. And in the pursuance of dharma, such killing was necessary, it was inevitable. But nothing could console Yudhishthir Maharaj. And as Srila Prabhupada explains there, that such grief on the part of Yudhishthir Maharaj was an arrangement of the Lord. The Lord is seated in the heart of every living entity as the super soul. And the Lord can dictate the feelings and the emotions of exalted souls like Yudhishthir Maharaj. Of course, as ordinary devotees, we cannot claim to have such a privilege. And we cannot justify our actions and desires by saying that this is also impelled by the Lord in the heart. We are responsible for our own desires and actions. When it comes, however, to eternal associates like King Yudhishthir, then the Lord sometimes, many times, acts through them to fulfill his own purposes. And hence, we find Yudhishthir Maharaj undergoing such grief. Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport there that just as Arjuna was apparently put into illusion just so that the Bhagavad Gita could be spoken, similarly, Yudhishthir Maharaj has been put into this kind of grief just so that something very momentous could happen. And we'll come to that in a few moments. Yudhishthir Maharaj is not an ordinary person. He is not even an ordinary devotee. He is an eternal associate of the Lord. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, he has been referred to as Hari Das. There are only three devotees in the entire Srimad Bhagavatam who have been specifically referred to as Hari Das. Anyone knows who those three are? Sorry? Govardhan, that's one. Yes, Haridasa Varya. He's the best among the servants of Lord Hari. Second, Uddhava. And third is Yudhishthir. So these are the three who have been specifically singled out as being Hari Das. So Yudhishthir Maharaj is certainly a very, very exalted soul. And there is no way that he can come under the grip of such ordinary lamentation or materialistic grief. He does not lament like an ordinary conditioned soul. So this was happening by the arrangement of the Lord. And the second point is, just as Arjuna at the beginning of the battle, just before the Bhagavad Gita was spoken, also fell under the spell of grief, and one of the reasons for Arjuna's grief and his reluctance to fight the battle was compassion. Because he was a great devotee of the Lord, and a devotee is always soft-hearted and compassionate, Arjuna, despite being such a valiant and fierce warrior, he also was compassionate. And therefore he did not like at all the idea that he would have to kill so many soldiers and plus so many of his associates, his family members, his worshipable superiors like Bhishma, Drona, etc. So similarly, Yudhishthir felt grief. It is natural for a devotee to feel compassionate, to feel disturbed when he or she sees violence and cruelty and death and pain and suffering. Even though Yudhishthir Maharaj at the onset of the battle understood what the reasons for the battle were, otherwise he would not have ventured into the battle. He knew. He understood. He was convinced that this battle was necessary. He was reluctant, but he understood. But after the battle was over, when he actually saw the massacre that happened. Millions and millions of people had died. And he started blaming himself. It's just because of me. Just so that I could sit on the throne, this massacre happened. And he went through a tremendous sense of guilt. He could not be consoled. So now the question arises, why did Krishna arrange that Yudhishthir Maharaj's grief could not be assuaged, that he could not be consoled? What was the reason? Certainly the sages were competent enough to console him, and what to speak of Krishna himself. So Krishna had a purpose. What was that purpose? The purpose was that Krishna wanted Yudhishthir Maharaj to be pacified, to be consoled, and made to understand everything by a great devotee, Bhishma. Why did Krishna want Bhishma to be the one to console Yudhishthir Maharaj? Because he wanted to glorify Bhishma. Bhishma again is a great devotee of the Lord. He is also not an ordinary person. He also wanted Bhishma to give the benefit of his experience in management of the whole kingdom, in Rajadharma, in political science and so on, to Yudhishthir. Amongst all the individuals present there, Bhishma Dev was the most experienced. He was the grandfather of the Pandavas. And therefore the most experienced, the most wise. He was a Mahajan, well versed in all aspects of Dharma, whether they were worldly Dharma and also transcendental Dharma. As we know, there are two types of Dharma. One that pertains to the world and the other that pertains to the spiritual world. And we are meant to follow both. Our ultimate goal is to attain spiritual dharma, which is pure Krishna consciousness, pure love of Godhead. However, because we are living in this world, there is a need for us to also follow certain norms, certain codes of conduct in this world. And therefore there is a connection between the worldly dharma that is prescribed in the scriptures and the spiritual dharma of pure devotional service. And it needs a very knowledgeable, wise and sober person to understand the connection between the two and to extract the necessary elements from the worldly dharma in such a way that they facilitate the development of the spiritual dharma. So it is indeed a rare person who is equipped not only with worldly wisdom, and who not only understand how the world works and what should be done and what should not be done whilst living in the world, but who's also very well versed with the spiritual dharma. So Bhishma Dev was not only a consummate politician, a diplomat, a warrior, a master strategist and so on, but he was also a great devotee of the Lord. He is known as one of the 12 Mahajans. Therefore, Bhishma Dev was extremely qualified and competent to be the one to teach Yudhishthir Maharaj what he should do as a king. Now, as per the Vedic scriptures, the king was also meant to be the personification of both these types of dharma. And therefore the kings, the ideal kings, were Raja Rishis, saintly kings. They straddled both worlds, the material world and the spiritual world, very effortlessly. Well, perhaps not effortlessly, because there were challenges at all times. There was always some kind of conflict that came up between the dharma of this world. There were often apparent contradictions between the various types of dharma that are prescribed for this world. Because this world is so complex And everything becomes so complicated in day-to-day living that there is sometimes a conflict between different principles of dharma. One has to choose. And also one has to see these different principles in relation to Krishna consciousness. How does one reconcile these things? So the king had to be very well versed. But because he was not Krishna, he was not God, therefore he needed the advice of many saintly people. So there were brahmanas, there were sages and other wise ministers who counseled the king. This was the system. However great the king may be, he would always consult with wise people. So much so that even when Krishna was in Dwarka, he used to consult his counselors, especially very wise personalities like Uddhava. So, from a worldly point of view, because Bhishma Dev was the most experienced amongst everybody, amongst all the people who were in the battlefield, he was the senior most person, the wisest amongst all. So Krishna wanted Bhishma to be the one to teach Yudhishthir. Because after all, this whole battle was Krishna's arrangement. He wanted Yudhishthir Maharaj, who was Dharmaraj, to be the king of the world and rule according to Dharma. And therefore, Yudhishthir Maharaj had to be properly equipped with the right understanding of these two types of dharmas. And who else but Bhishma Dev could be the best teacher for him? And Yudhishthir Maharaj had so much affection, respect, regard, and admiration for Bhishma Dev that definitely everything that Bhishma Dev said, Yudhishthir Maharaj would assimilate very readily. So these were the two reasons why Krishna wanted Yudhishthir Maharaj to be consoled only by Bhishma Dev and by nobody else, not even by himself. Number one, he wanted to glorify Bhishma so that everybody would know the glories of Krishna, of Bhishma Dev. This episode in the Mahabharata is very famous, of Bhishma lying on the bed of arrows and then instructing Yudhishthir Maharaj for a long time. And secondly, as I mentioned, because he was the ideal person to instruct Yudhishthir Maharaj. So they all came there. So, and Bhishma Dev was there, as we see in this verse, lying on the bed of arrows, about to pass away. Now, why was Bhishma Dev lying on the bed of arrows? As a great devotee, shouldn't he have survived the battle like the five Pandavas did? If Bhishma Dev was indeed such an exalted devotee, as indeed he was, then why did he not survive? And why did he fight on the wrong side? So this also is a question that is very important for us. In the purports, in the 10th canto, Srila Prabhupada explains that the purpose of the Lord and the purpose of the battle of Kurukshetra was to kill the demons. However, Srila Prabhupada mentions that there were some great devotees like Bhishma Dev also who were on the other side. And they also left this world. And as we will see later on in this chapter, one of the later verses of this chapter, it is mentioned, gata hata svarupam. Hata gata hata, those who were killed there in the battlefield in the presence of Krishna, hata gata, they obtained, they went to, and they obtained their svarupa, their constitutional position in the spiritual world. So, very astonishing thing. All those soldiers who were killed on the battlefield in the presence of Krishna all attained to the spiritual world. Now, we have heard that when Krishna kills somebody, then that person is very fortunate and he attains salvation. But even if somebody dies in the presence of the Lord, that person also attains salvation. What to speak of somebody being killed by Krishna? Even if Krishna's pure devotee like Arjuna kills someone, even then that person gets delivered. And this is what happened over here. So, therefore, we see that Bhishma's presence here is very interesting. So why did Bhishma fight on the other side? Number one, this was Krishna's arrangement. Why so? Because Krishna wants to send out a very strong message to the world that no matter who you are, no matter how powerful you are, if you're not on my side, then eventually you will be vanquished. You will be defeated. Of course, Bhishma is a devotee, but since he's on the other side, but materially speaking, from an ordinary point of view, he was extremely powerful. Actually, Bhishma Dev was the most powerful warrior on the battlefield. Even more powerful than Arjuna. More powerful than any of the Abhima or anyone else. So the fact that the most powerful warrior on the battlefield had to eventually die on the battlefield is a message from Krishna that you may be the most powerful person, but if you're not going to be on my side, Krishna says, if you're not going to be on the side of Dharma, then you will be vanquished. So this is an important lesson. And conversely, if you are on my side, no matter how weak you may relatively appear to be with respect to the opposition from a material point of view, success and victory will always be yours. As the very last verse of the Bhagavad Gita says, Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna Yatra Partha Dhanurdharaha Tatra Shri Vijayo Bhutir Dhruva Niti Matir Mama. Sanjaya, the secretary of Dhritarashtra, says, wherever there is the master of all mystics, Krishna, who is also known as Yogeshwara, and wherever there is his great devotee Arjuna, the wielder of the Gandiva bow, there will be victory, morality, opulence, and all good qualities. So definitely, the devotees of the Lord, by the grace of Krishna, will always be victorious. The devotees will have to go through many challenges, many hardships, but if they persevere and remain faithful, then eventually victory will be theirs. As Parikshit Maharaj himself says later on, that my grandfathers, the Pandavas, from an ordinary point of view, should not have won this battle because they were in a much smaller army compared to the Kauravas. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai, Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. So from an ordinary point of view, the army of the Kauravas was much larger than the Pandava army. Secondly, there were great warriors on the side of the Kauravas like Bhishma, Drona, Kripa. And my uncles and their army were like small fish compared to the gigantic Timingala fish, bigger than whales even, who could have swallowed up the entire Pandava army. But despite this, my uncles emerged victorious because they were in the shelter of Lord Krishna, because they had the mercy of Lord Krishna. So therefore, Victory or defeat, eventually. Success or failure, eventually, depends on the mercy of Krishna. And depends on whether one is a surrendered devotee or not. So this was the first reason why Bhishma fought on the other side. The second reason is a little more, shall we say, confidential. And that is that Krishna wanted to taste the vir rasa, the rasa of chivalry. You know, because Krishna is Rasika Shekhara. He is the topmost amongst those who relish transcendental mellows. And there are certain mellows that perhaps are hard to experience in the spiritual world. For example, the Vir Rasa. The rasa of chivalry is usually experienced when one fights. And one fights with one's enemies, one's adversaries. But in the spiritual world, there is no adversary. There is no enemy. There are no demons there. There are no battles there. So how can the Lord experience to His full satisfaction the rasa of chivalry? He is Akhila Rasamrita Murti. He is the personification of all the rasas, Akhila Rasa, the nectar of all the transcendental mellows. Therefore, the Lord descends into the material world and He nominates some of His extraordinary devotees to fight with Him. So when He was fighting with Bhishma also, He was experiencing the bliss of that rasa of chivalry. And as is explained in this canto, that when Krishna was, or Bhishma was shooting arrows at Bhishma, I beg your pardon, Bhishma was shooting arrows at Krishna. Krishna was feeling them to be like soft, fragrant flowers that Bhishma was offering to him. So Krishna had these two reasons for placing Bhishma on the other side. From Bhishma's point of view, what was his justification for fighting on the side of the Kauravas? Firstly, as he himself said, he had eaten the salt of the Kauravas, meaning that he was obliged to the Kauravas, because the Kauravas were the ones who were maintaining him. And it's because of them, that he was living, you know. So generally there is a principle of gratitude. And gratitude means that if somebody is maintaining you, maintaining your life, providing you what you need for your sustenance, then you should be grateful to them and you shouldn't, quote-unquote, backstab them. You shouldn't go against them. So this is kind of worldly morality. And we see that happening on several occasions. But there's also another reason from Bhishma's point of view. And we'll go back a little bit to some of the pastimes of the Mahabharata. Now, we all know that when Bhishma was Devavrata, not yet Bhishma, when he was 32 years old, and he discovered that his father, King Shantanu, and that was common in those days amongst the Kshatriyas, he desired to marry Satyavati. But because he had his son, who was the crown prince, and who was qualified and entitled in every respect to be the king after Shantanu, he was very reluctant to go ahead with this marriage, despite his deep desire to do so. When Bhishma Dev understood the cause of his father's despondency, he found out the reason and he approached the father of Satyavati to give his daughter's hand in marriage to his father. Something very unusual. You know, very, very unusual. Usually it is the father who approaches the girl's father to ask for his son's hand, you know, for daughter's hand for his son. And here it was the reverse thing. very unusual, something that is not obviously to be taken as an example to follow. But in any case, it happened. Now, Satyavati's father had some conditions. He said, I'm willing to hand over my daughter in marriage to your father, King Shantanu, but I have my conditions. He knew how to drive a hard bargain. So he said, my daughter's son should become the king, not you. So Bhishma Dev said, all right, I take a vow that I will never sit on the throne of Hastinapur. I renounce the throne. He took a vow, first vow. But Satyavati's father was not satisfied. He said, you may renounce the throne. You're a word man of honor. So I accept what you say. I believe you. I trust you. But what if your son tomorrow he grows up and he wants to become the king? So Bhishma took a second vow, an even more terrible vow for a Kshatriya, that I will not marry and father children. I will remain a celibate. When Bhishma said that, the demigods started showering flowers from the cloud, behind the clouds. For Kshatriyas, especially in those days, to remain celibate was something unheard of. But Satyavati's father was still not satisfied. What if the king, whoever becomes the king, that is my daughter's son or his son, what if these kings are weak? Then what will you do? And they're incompetent, they're not able to rule the kingdom. What will you do? Then Bhishma took a third vow. He said, at any cost, I will protect the throne of Hastinapur. Whoever sits on the throne, I will ensure that I will protect them. So three vows Bhishma took. First, that he renounced the throne. Second, that he would be celibate and not have children. And third, that he would always protect the throne of Hastinapur, whoever was sitting on it. So therefore, one reason from Bhishma's point of view, one reason why he fought on the side of the Kauravas was not only because he was maintained by the Kauravas, but also he was bound by his vow. And the vow of protecting the throne was something that was playing on his mind, certainly. Therefore, Bhishma fought on the other side. It is also mentioned here that Bhishma was lying on a bed of arrows now, about to pass away. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions that Bhishma Dev was endowed with the power of leaving his material body at will. And his lying down on the bed of arrows was his own choice. And we come back to the Mahabharata story at the past time. Eventually, of course, after hearing these three vows of Bhishma, Satyavati's father was convinced and he agreed to hand over his daughter to King Shantanu. When Shantanu heard about this, he was overwhelmed with affection and gratitude to his son. And he blessed him. He gave him two benedictions. And the first benediction was that you will only die when you want to die. It is called Swachhanda Mrityu in the Bhagavatam also. So Bhishma had the benediction that he could remain alive as long as he wanted and he would die only when he wanted to, even on the battlefield. Which is why, at the very beginning of the battle, when Yudhishthir Maharaj walked across the gap between the two armies, he went straight to Bhishma. Just as the battle was about to commence, when the two armies were assembled facing each other, At that time, Yudhishthira Maharaj got down from his chariot and walked across all the way to the other side. And everybody thought, including his own brothers, that Yudhishthira Maharaj had surrendered, that he was no longer willing to fight, and that he was going to say, yes, we will not fight this battle. So many of them began to criticize him. Some of them began to think ill about Yudhishthira Maharaj in his mind. But actually that was not the case. So, which is an important lesson for us, that before we jump to judgments about people, we should know the facts at least. Many times we say, oh, why this person did such and such a thing, but maybe there was some reason for it, there was some valid reason. And we don't know what the reason is. But then Yudhishthira Maharaj went to Bhishma and he said, oh, grandsire, please give me your blessings to fight you. And Bhishma was very pleased. He said, my dear Yudhishthira, I'm very so happy that you have come to me to seek blessings. If you hadn't, I would have cursed you. You know, so tell me, I'm so pleased with you that I'm willing to offer you some benediction. What benediction do you want? And Yudhishthira Maharaj said, oh, grandfather, please give me the benediction that I can kill you. Actually, he said, no, he said, tell me how I can kill you. Yes, how I can kill you. So, Bhishma said, that's not possible. And why was it not possible? Because he had this benediction. See, in those days, even a personality who, you know, like Shantanu, could offer a benediction and the benedictions would work. In this day and age, benedictions or blessings and curses, they hardly work. Because the person giving the benedictions or the curses doesn't have the potency usually. But even King Shantanu, his benedictions worked. So Bhishma knew that he had this benediction and that he couldn't be killed by anybody. He could die only when he wanted to die. So he said, Yudhishthira, you cannot kill me. And the time has not come for me to tell you when you can kill me and how I shall die. At the right time, I shall reveal it, but not now. So therefore, Bhishma knew that because he can't be killed, there was nothing that Yudhishthira Maharaj could do anything about. Yudhishthira Maharaj went to Dronacharya, asked for blessings, to Kripacharya, asked for blessings, etc. And then he went back. And everybody began to glorify the virtuous nature of Yudhishthira Maharaj. Arjuna, in his own style, asked for blessings. He shot arrows which struck the ground a few feet from Bhishma Dev. From Bhishma Deva's feet. So that was Arjuna's way of offering his obeisances. To shoot an arrow that would hit the ground just a few feet ahead of Bhishma. And then Bhishma responded appropriately by shooting an arrow that went just above Arjuna's head. That was to offer blessings. So a unique style of doing things. So anyway, as time passed, you know, then the whole battle was fought. And then Bhishma, on the 10th day of the battle, you know, he fell. And he remained on the bed of arrows by his own choice. And by the way, the second benediction that King Shantanu gave his son was that no one would be able to slay him in battle. Undefeatable in battle. So these were the two benedictions of Shantanu. One, that Bhishma could die at his own sweet will. And second, that no one would be able to defeat him in battle. So if at all Bhishma had to be defeated and killed, it would have to be by his own will. And it was only Krishna who could intervene. And Bhishma, as an instrument of the Lord, understood the Lord's desire. After all, he is a great exalted Mahajan. So he cooperated in unique ways. He made Krishna break his vow and therefore he cooperated with Krishna. Because Krishna wanted to taste the Virarasa. So he made Krishna break his vow that he wouldn't lift a weapon in the battlefield. And he used the wheel like a battlefield, like a weapon. So in any case, so Bhishma was lying there on the bed of arrows, waiting for the perfect departure. And in this chapter, we are going to see some extraordinary things, how all the respectable people gathered there to offer their love and respects to Bhishma Dev, and also Bhishma Dev's prayers and Bhishma Dev's instructions to King Yudhishthir on various subjects. And this we will be seeing in the verses ahead. So we'll stop here. Thank you very much.